Another microbiology talk here. Sorry for the long title. I get paid by the word though, so. What I wanted to do today is talk about an assignment that I've developed over the past actually 8 years. It's not one that I have yet tested to see how it impacts student attitudes. That's my next phase. If anybody here is good at educational research, talk to me, that would be great. But I'm going to be talking about an assignment and kind of go into some of the details and some of the flexible parts of this assignment. I'm trying to engage students, their faith, their learning, and their actions by looking at a problem that is kind of woven through a semester course, undergraduate, microbiology, it's general, it could be nursing students, it could be biology majors, biochem majors. And looking at something that I see as a fundamental microbiology problem on the science side. What I usually do is start off and have students take a look at this photograph, which is one of the most polluted rivers in the world. I think it's in the top 10 polluted rivers. And this is in Indonesia, and maybe you can see there's quite a bit of plastic trash. This is actually a river, and the people who live nearby, by and large, need to get their drinking water from this. A few years ago, Westmont College had a really good conference. It was called Liberal Arts for a Fragile Planet, and I was convinced by a historian that you should start with a very dramatic picture to kind of get the students' attention. So hopefully I got your attention here. Okay, I think most of you are probably aware of the term Anthropocene. I don't believe it's been officially accepted as the name for the current epoch that we're living in. But this is an epoch that's been proposed as a name for pretty much starting at the Industrial Revolution and on, this next geological epoch that is characterized by major changes to the Earth from human activity, including our element cycling of carbon, nitrogen, and phosphorus, and we're hopefully most aware of the issues with carbon cycling that have been perturbed, and then other materials that are now found in Earth sediments that are leaving a record, if you will, including radioactive nuclides, oddly enough, chicken bones, pesticides, concrete, and plastic. And now, well, I don't know, when was it, like 2014, a term for a new type of sedimentary rock that actually has plastic embedded in it has been coined, and that's the plastaglomerate that you see here. So we've got we're changing the geological record with plastics for sure, as well as some of the other things we've talked about. So I'm gonna just tell you about this assignment. It's a semester-long assignment and kind of give you a general overview. The goal here is to have students grapple with a complex environmental problem in a holistic way, in a way that goes more than beyond just the microbiology or just the science. And essentially, it's very easy. This is not patented. Take it if you will. I just have students keep a journal. It's semester long, starting about week 4 or 5, when they start to get a foundation in some of the general concepts of microbiology. Then I give them weekly assignments. They're anywhere between 10 and 12 assignments, depending on how I feel. And generally speaking, I give them a reading assignment. This is usually something that I might not have time to cover in class, but it'll be something like maybe a newspaper article. It'll be maybe something from, I really like Science News. They have a lot of good little quick tidbits that are scientifically based. Or I give them a fact-finding mission, and what I mean by that is go look on our university website and see what the university has to say about plastics and sustainability or something like that. And then give them a prompt to stimulate reflection. So it's a pretty simple formula. So as I mentioned, I do this in a microbiology class, and I'll come to some of the specifics about microbiology, but I do think that this could be adapted to a lot of other types of courses. I'm gonna start by having you do what I have my students do in class when I introduce this. So bear with me or humor me. I have students take out all the plastic items that they have on their person, in their bags, in their purses. And if you would, there's no desk here, but you could pull out all the plastic items, if you would, that you have with you, and just put them in a little pile. however you wanna do that. Hopefully there are no guns. One semester, almost every single student, I'm not kidding, almost every single student in my class had pepper spray. And I was kinda like, what? Everybody does? Okay. Anybody have pepper spray here? Okay, well, I think maybe you can see my purpose here. One of the reasons to do this really is to get students to see the plastic first. See it. What is made of plastic? What are the things that we have that's made of plastic? Look how ubiquitous it is. And then consider, I'll just pose the question, where is it going to go when we're done with it? Where will it go? So after we introduce this, I have students, I give them their first journal assignment. I realized as I was putting this talk together that this paper is not even a paper. It's an article from a defunct journal magazine called Microbe that was put up by the American Society for Microbiology. This came out in June. I read this paper. It's Marine Microbes Not Much Help Degrading Ocean Floating Plastics. And it very clearly explained why microorganisms cannot degrade ocean plastics in the ocean, and anywhere else for that matter. So it's very simple, it's a one-page paper, and it got me thinking, actually, this plastic accumulation in the environment is partially a microbiological problem. So I have students read this and then define the problem. What is the problem with plastics not biodegrading? How are microorganisms involved? And generally speaking, plastic undergoes very little natural degradation because microorganisms cannot degrade it. So there are a few exceptions, but with few exceptions, microorganisms lack digestive enzymes that will help them break down plastics. And I should say here, when I say plastics, I'm talking about fossil fuel-based synthetic plastics, and there are a lot of them. We're used to the recycling numbers 1 through 6, and 7 is just a miscellaneous. So they're different from each other chemically, but we're talking about the synthetic plastics. And essentially, each type of plastic, if there were microorganisms able to degrade them, they would require different enzymes for every type of plastic since they are chemically different from each other. So that's one of the things that I think students really need to understand. And then as a consequence, plastic accumulates in the environment, and that could be in landfills, it could be on land, in marine environments. And I have California circled here because I'm from Azusa Pacific University by Los Angeles, and we have a number of rivers that are feeding plastic into the Pacific, which then end up in the North Pacific Gyre. And I think some of you are probably have heard of the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, very large area of the ocean that is full of plastic at this point, and we don't really know if we're going to be able to clean this up. So I try to have students consider what the consequences of marine plastics would be to marine organisms. I tend to focus a little more on the marine aspect since we are a feeder in Los Angeles into the Pacific Gyre. I don't know if anybody has seen this photograph before. Chris Jordan did a series of these photographs of bird carcasses from Midway Island. Midway Island is only inhabited by National Park Service people. And so very few people on this island, and yet the plastic that's washed up from this Pacific, from plastic moving through the Pacific Gyre has led to ingestion. And you can see as this bird is decomposing, first of all, the plastic is not decomposing in its gut. And second, you can see it's in the digestive tract. This is a huge issue for seabirds who spend a lot of their time flying. They need enormous amounts of food, enormous amounts of energy, and plastics in their GI tracts are blocking that normal function. So this is, it's a threat to a lot of seabirds, for instance. Now, it kind of led people to ask the question, why are birds eating all this plastic? And the assumption was it either looks like something, food, that is food, or maybe they're attracted they're attracted by the colors. And interestingly, as people started to look into this question, it turns out that plastics become a substrate for microorganisms, including marine algae, especially polypropylene and polyethylene plastics. They'll attach, and when they die, they release a chemical that sends a signal to the birds to eat. So in other words, the birds are finding plastics through olfactory means, not through vision. That was the assumption before. It smells like krill to them, so it smells like their food, and this is one of those unintended consequences. So once students kind of grapple with what the problem is, and how it relates to microbiology in this case, then the second week they do a personal plastic audit. So I have them keep track of the plastic waste that they throw away or recycle, and that is to connect students personally to the problem and then it'll set them up for the next journal entry. I just grabbed a couple student examples. I let them either put it in a chart or take a picture, which means they have to collect it for a week in some place in their house and then take a picture. But I do like them to note the types of plastic, because I do want them to understand plastics are not one monolithic thing. There are different kinds of plastics. Some are easier to recycle than others, etc. So the third journal entry is the one that I really need to set up carefully in class. And that is, I asked them to make goals for personal plastic reductions in the semester. And I learned the hard way when I didn't really ground this in any kind of ethical framework. I realized a whole lot of students thought it was really a stupid assignment, because if they lowered their own personal plastic usage, everybody else around them was still using plastic. It didn't make any dent in the problem. Therefore, why should I even do this? And I realized, oh, wow, they're really looking at this in a consequentialist kind of perspective. Maybe I need to think about how I want to frame this ethically. So I thought a lot, and I thought moderation, a cardinal virtue, which, you know, you could apply if you aren't working at a Christian school. You could still talk about cardinal virtues, I believe. Moderation, justice as cardinal virtues, love, and then common good ethics. So we can have that discussion in class, and then it's framed as a positive rather than a negative. You are building, you know, you could look at it this way if you want to. You could be trying to cultivate moderation in your life as a positive. Now, the nice thing is when I teach this in spring, then it coincides with Lent, and then I can say, hey, if you observe Lent, you can think about this maybe as potentially as a Lenten observance. So from here on out, I do a lot of different things, and it changes from semester to semester, which is actually one of the things I like about this assignment. But I do try to keep it relevant to microbiology at least a few weeks. So maybe we'll talk about something like microbial-derived bioplastics. So there are microbes that will make plastic-like molecules as a storage molecule for excess carbon molecules, and then they, of course, can break it down. So there's some natural biodegradation that would happen. And then we use articles to help them consider the effects of plastics on non-human multicellular life, like corals, oysters. Corals are a little bit interesting because coral reefs that are most threatened by plastic are going to be in areas where some of the more developing countries are nearby. Developing countries that may not have the resources to be taking care of their garbage effectively. And so then that becomes kind of one of our topics is, what do we do with the garbage? What about countries that are developing and they don't have money for maybe some basic needs, let alone taking care of garbage going out to sea? I don't know if you heard about this. Last year, there were multiple articles that looked to see where have plastics gotten into our water supplies. Yes, they're in a lot of bottled water. We're finding it in tap water. We're finding it in beer. That was a study. I think people just wanted to drink beer for that study. And then salt, sea salt especially. So this is kind of making sense. It's getting into some of the things now that humans are consuming. So part of what I also would like students to grapple with is looking at systemic approaches. Yeah, you alone are not going to change this problem. But this is a systemic problem. Everything is made out of plastic, as we just kind of see our computers. Everything, food is wrapped in plastic, these kinds of things. So what are some systemic approaches to dealing with an issue like plastics? And you know, churches have a role, or could have a role. Legislation has a role. I'm from California, so we're legislating a lot of plastic usage. And what we're actually doing is having a conversation about what plastic things we think are valuable and what are not. Actually, I think we're saying which things are not valuable, but I think it's worth having the conversation what things are valuable. I have nursing students who kind of freak out at this because they're like, I use plastic all the time in my clinicals. And so we can have that conversation. What do we want to use plastic for? Maybe we can make those decisions. Last year, the Anglican Church gave up plastic for Lent as a unified body. And so, you know, you can ask students, what do you think about that? Is that appropriate? What are the benefits? What are the drawbacks? And then there's a movement among African American churches in the U.S. called Green the Church. And it's particularly kind of framed as something that people of color should be more interested in part that has to do with the pollution that we've seen in, you know, marginalized minority populations in our country. We see more pollution in some of these areas. What else? This part I really like. I make students write a letter to somebody. Could be a company, it could be a legislator. A lot of them write to Starbucks. One student wrote to her church last year and said, hey, how about we have reusable mugs at our church with people's names and we can build community that way. So some people maybe write letters to an editor or something like that. So I try to encourage them to write. And I had one student one year who said, I don't believe we should do any legislating of plastic. And so I said, okay, well, write your legislator about that. Say you don't think there should be laws banning the use of plastic, and then defend it. Local and national plastic recycling issues I always try to get to, because a lot of students, when you say something about reducing, you know, something like plastic, that you will immediately default to, oh, I can recycle it. Let me recycle it. And the reality is last year, I think a lot of you are probably aware that China just decided we don't want your recyclables anymore. We are not going to take them. And it made us realize that we didn't really build very much infrastructure in our country to deal with these recycled materials. We're not using it as a commodity. We're not really, we're not making products out of these recycled materials. And then I think it's helpful for students to know which plastics in your municipal, environment actually do get recycled, because they're not all recycled. That's the bottom line. At Azusa Pacific University, there are three different plastics that get recycled, number one, number two, and number five. That's it. So everything else is going to go in the landfill. There have been some other high profile, or at least one high profile solution. I don't know if you heard about this, but a Dutch guy came up with this idea of, let's build this big trap that will be sent out and pull in plastics. And he sent it out last year, our company did, and then they had to retrieve it early because they hadn't really considered some of the forces in the ocean, and they were concerned that the net would actually trap marine life. That would be the, you know, how do you selectively just get the plastic and not the rest of the marine life? And this is a challenge. So there are a number of limitations. It's very easy to say, like, oh, here's the solution, but what are the limitations of that? Those are the kinds of conversations or things I'm hoping students will consider. So overall, there are some advantages, I think, to taking this approach. If you want to do something like journal assignments, you can use it to reinforce course content. I do this a lot. The American Society for Microbiology has really good, very specific curriculum guidelines. I can go through and say, okay, bioremediation, you know, here's how I can connect that to plastic. It can be connected to plastic. So there's some potential for reinforcing course content. It's low stakes writing for the students, but it can still foster deep learning because they have to write and think. I mean, you know, some people do a very thoughtful job and other people just kind of wing it, but they have to write something. It's easy to grade. I usually leave it till the end of the semester. This is my favorite thing to grade, so I leave it till I'm almost done with all the grades. Everybody gets an A if they, you know, have considered deeply, or not even that deeply, these considerations. And then it's minimal class time required. For something like microbiology, it's so content heavy that it becomes a challenge trying to find spaces in class for faith integration, for other considerations, kind of what I think of as tangential issues that are just as important as the content of a microbiology, but you just feel like you don't have time for it. It's really adaptable to current events, changing policies. I just saw last month that Canada is planning to ban single-use plastics, which is interesting, joining the ranks of Costa Rica. They announced that in March. So you can kind of keep up, or if you're like me, you rely on your colleagues to send you these articles. I have a lot of people who know I work on this, and I should acknowledge them in helping me stay up to date on some of these current events. I think the method can be adapted to other complex systemic problems. I plan this next semester to incorporate more on climate change and microbes, so I wouldn't necessarily call this the plastic assignment. I'll just call this a journal assignment or microbiology journal assignment. I can keep it kind of neutral. And I think that one of the things that I have found is that this kind of assignment goes beyond individual student learning. Because students give up plastic in some way, or they reduce their usage of plastic, they usually get their roommates to do it, they get their families to do it. I had a student whose family was all using disposable plates plastic utensils, plastic cups every single day for every meal. And so he said, hey, how about we stop doing that? How about we just use the dishes that we have? I'll wash the dishes. And they switched, and then they thought, hey, we saved a lot of money because we're not buying these these things that we throw away every day. So that was kind of a surprise, but it also it ties in nicely with kind of, as an individual, you can't tackle this kind of a problem. It's got to be a group effort. So last thing is, I think that this assignment can be used to challenge a number of tendencies or habits in the meantime. Maybe more importantly, I didn't coin this term, functional atheism. One of my friends was just talking about this the other day. You know, Psalm 24, verse 1 says, the earth is the Lord's, and all that is in it, the world and those who live in it. It is very easy to live like this isn't the Lord's, like this is Sarah Richards' world, or, you know, fill in your name. It's very easy to do that. And so I did want to connect an action with this concept, so to just have students evaluate, am I living, and I'll say this for myself too, am I living according to my beliefs that this is God's world? And then I think Pope Francis, if you've read Laudato Si, I always have students read excerpts of Laudato Si. He is very critical of a technological approach only to solving some of these environmental problems. So he says, the ethical and spiritual roots of environmental problems require that we look for solutions not only in technology, but in a change of humanity. Otherwise, we would be dealing merely with symptoms. And so students need to think, what is at the root of this problem of plastics? Is it really a microbiological problem? Is it a problem with our consumption, with greed, with, you know, all of those things need to be addressed. And then lastly, I hope to get students to consider, challenge their own omission of non-human creatures in models of flourishing, redemption, restoration, and then kind of challenge this idea that solutions to complex problems can be solved by personal lifestyle changes, and finally, try to get them to consider their own attitudes where, like, let me just default to recycling as a fix for some of these problems. So really, that's my spiel, and I would be happy to share any resources that I have. I actually put together a little reading list bibliography. If you want, send me an email and I can send that to you. Other than that, I'll take some questions.
So you mentioned using some of the virtues and morals as kind of a way to give them. One of the things that I found helpful, you kind of hit it a couple times, is some of the appeals to taking care of your neighbor, right? So suffering is our home. You started off with a picture in Indonesia, sometimes that students grab a little better than, oh, I should just be better. Oh, it's hurting someone.
Yes. And we definitely do raise that. Or if I don't raise it, students do. We have these little informal discussions that usually come up. What does it mean to love your neighbor? Yeah. Is there a way to love your neighbor in this as well?
I'm very happy that you mentioned Laudato Si. Anybody who hasn't read it,
should.
Besides being a great document, there's a couple things in there. Francis was originally trained as a chemist.
That I didn't know.
His knowledge of chemistry comes through that. I know he had that already. But nonetheless, it's a scientific document. But it's also a theological document. And he takes on the view in some Christian circles that we as a species have been given dominion over the earth, and therefore we can do anything we want. And he distinguishes with very good biblical scholarship between dominion and stewardship. And I think it's an easy read. It's available free on the internet, and everyone should read it and assign it in classes like this. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful. Thank you.
Other questions?
I very much appreciate it. I taught a high school course in environmental science and one in chemistry. We had a plastic project.
Ooh.
But there's also, do you
I've thought about that. No, I don't intentionally bring that up, but it does happen organically. I teach the lab too, so we have a lot of conversations. So it's interesting because I think this next generation of students, the Gen Zers, are a lot more informed than the millennials were, or I'm finding that. And they will default to something like, oh, I'm just going to make a bag out of an old t-shirt. That's what they default to because they don't have money. They're not going to buy the tote bag, but they will repurpose one or they will borrow them from each other. So they come up organically. But I have not integrated that. I'd love to. This assignment already is so long but I hear your point. I think it's really important to have them think, hey, it's not all just like don't use plastic and then everything else is okay.
Did you see change that extends beyond their time in class? Do you hear back from students?
I do, and so I couldn't give you any. I haven't done this as a real research project. So all the students who let me know are self-selecting. They're the ones who will forward me articles. I still do hear from students years out. They'll send me articles. I have a student who was my research student who went completely plastic-free. She's more hardcore than I am, for sure. But so I hear back from them if it's impacted them. But I would love to do a survey and find out. That's one of my questions is, does this kind of change your habits in a long term? Or is this kind of a short-term change in habit?
Great, thank you very much.
Thank you.